This is KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. It's been a year since the racially charged student-led protests at the University of Missouri, which led to the resignation of UM System President Tim Wolf. As a result, universities across the country were left to figure out how to tackle conversations on racial issues. A year ago, I reported on how Southeast started that conversation long before the events at MU. Recently, I sat down with Sonya Rucker, the Coordinator of Institutional Equity and Diversity at Southeast. Here's our conversation. Last year around this time, we met and the University's Diversity Task Force was putting together a final report of recommendations for how you all were going to be moving forward with diversity relations on this campus. And around that time, there was the student protest at MU for the various racial incidents that were occurring. However, at SEMO, you all are already having that conversation and making steps to improve relations. How has that been going so far?
Well, you know, the last time you and I spoke, we were in the process of wrapping up the diversity task force. It started in November 2014. So Our goal was to submit the final report and recommendations in December of 2015 to get approval from the Board of Regents. So the task was rather daunting because we had talked about so many things and we knew we needed to pare everything down into some final recommendations. So it was important to figure out, you know, which items we wanted to include. We didn't want to leave anything on the table. So, you know, the task was to put it in a report without excluding anything that people were involved in that really had a stake in and really wanted to see move forward in the final recommendations. So we finally ended up with 9 recommendations. There's quite a few bullets under each recommendation, so it's more like 20 or so, but you know, we managed to finally end up with 9. And I think, you know, when everything was happening at Mizzou, we were really already having these critical conversations where people were really doing a deep dive into the climate on campus, how they were feeling, things that we really needed to work on. So it was almost like therapy because these task force meetings were really just people talking and just saying, you know, this is how I feel. These are the things that we really need to be looking at. These are the concerns that I have. So, you know, in the end, everyone really felt like their voices were being heard, that they mattered, that they were contributing, and that people really wanted to see us move into a really positive direction. And it was difficult because you're talking about really negative things. Talking about race in general can make people very uncomfortable. So the fact that we were talking about the most negative aspects of race and, you know, how it affects people on a daily basis was, it was a tough conversation. They were tough conversations to have, but very necessary. And I think, you know, when we were in that process, things were happening on Mizzou's campus that really kind of were focused around race relations and how people were feeling that really wasn't their community. They didn't feel welcome. They didn't feel valued, and they didn't feel like their voices were being heard. So we were somewhat lucky that we were ahead of that curve and already talking about these things that they were just dealing with.
One thing that is interesting about this diversity task force is the idea that these are contributions made by students, faculty, and staff here at the university. Why is that important?
Talking about race, racism, sexism, homophobia, any type of diversity conversation is going to be a difficult one. People don't want to have those labels. They don't want to bring up things that are going to make people uncomfortable, that are going to kind of talk about the negative aspects of our community. So I think the fact that Dr. Dobbins and then Dr. Vargas were both willing to open up the dialogue and say, this is important enough for us to kind of go through these uncomfortable moments was critical. And we continued that when we did the talking booth videos for the Martin Luther King commemoration last year, because we saw how valuable it was just to have those conversations, because sometimes people just want to be heard. And you feel uncomfortable when something happens to you that you think is racist or discriminatory. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to, you almost feel like, well, if I bring it up, that's going to validate it. That's going to say it really did happen. And so people will sometimes just hold those things close or only share it with really close people, friends or family members. But we were really just opening it up and saying, as a community, these things are important to discuss. So let's just come together and put everything out on the table. So I think being able to have open dialogues, whether people walk away agreeing or not, just the idea of having a conversation, being respectful and civil, and listening to another person's point of view is always important in any situation, and especially when it came to talking about diversity and inclusion on this campus.
I want to jump right into those 9 recommendations. The one that caught my attention was the curriculum review. How is that process going to work?
Well, you know, we have curriculum review as a very broad term. I mean, because we have various colleges, we have various initiatives already going on campus. The university studies program or curriculum is being reviewed right now, so there's some changes coming down the pipeline in that area. So for us, we really had to keep the conversation broad because there were so many other initiatives happening around campus. We didn't want to move too quickly to say, you know, these are specific things that we want to do. A lot of campuses like Mizzou were having the conversation about whether or not a required diversity course was a good recommendation. We discussed that a little bit as well. But I think, you know, in the end, we decided to just really kind of focus on the fact that we do need to have more inclusive conversations occurring in the classroom. We need to think about certain courses that could potentially be implemented in different colleges, but we really still just kind of kept it broad. We really just made that recommendation that curriculum review is something critical that we need to look at some point, or actually I think at every step of the way. But, you know, we couldn't really come to the table and say we need these classes specifically. One of the things that the students talked about was the fact that we didn't have certain courses on Africana studies or Latino studies or women and gender studies. So those were areas we really said, okay, let's look to find out whether or not we can get those courses implemented. And then there was the conversation around just the profile of the students that are in the classroom. You know, the student profile has changed. We've increased our diversity numbers in terms of African American Latino students. We've increased our international student populations. So we also wanted to make sure that faculty were aware your typical student is different from the student that you had 5 years ago. So you need to be more conscious and aware of how you're delivering information, how you're doing outreach, how you're making sure that those students are being successful, or that those students feel connected, because people come from different cultures and backgrounds, and their ways of interacting with faculty in their various countries or their various high schools was very different than what they were used to when they came here. So we just wanted to make faculty aware of the fact that, you know, you may have to approach just interacting and connecting with students a bit differently than you did in the past.
Well, student enrollment has gone up this year, but in the report, it mentioned that in 2005, the amount of non-white students that were represented at this campus were 12.3%, and now that number has almost doubled in size to 21.3%. How do you all try to keep retention rates high with diversity in mind?
Well, you know, retention is a big goal for Dr. Vargas. He's been talking about it quite a bit. I think when it comes to retention, what I was talking about as far as the faculty member connecting with students differently, that goes across the board with people that are advising students, people that work in financial aid, students that work in any office on campus. Their experience, how they're being treated, how they feel about their place on this campus, I think all of those things contribute to retention. If a student is in a department where there's not a lot of diversity, or they don't feel like their faculty are receptive, or they don't feel like their faculty are connecting with them. That can make a difference as to whether or not a student will stay here, because they'll, you know, think about going somewhere else where they're you know, getting more of the service and that attention that they need. So I think, you know, we definitely want to make people aware that our students are more diverse than they were 5 years ago, but it also kind of goes over to we should always be thinking about serving our student populations better. We should always be thinking about what's going to make it easier for the students. Students shouldn't have to go to 3 or 4 different offices to get, you know, something, or get a question answered, or get something taken care of. So student services is always important. And, you know, the students are very different in regards to being millennials. Mm-hmm. They like instant access. They, you know, will go online or send you an email rather than come to your office, just because that's the way they interact. So mm-hmm. sometimes we have to change the way we do our jobs to fit this new genre, or, you know, type of student.
Going back a little bit, diversity in this particular context that we're talking about is referring to race. But as you're aware, diversity is much broader than that. And something the university did in 2014 was establish an LGBT resource center here on campus. So how is that going so far?
Well, you know, I wasn't here when the LGBT resource center started. I had a chance to work with Megan a little bit before she left. But, you know, that I think was extremely important because as we're trying to make ourselves attractive to students, we have to be thinking about the fact that you're going to have some students who are in high school who are already self-identifying as LGBT, or potentially, you know, thinking that that might actually be the diversity that I identify with. So when you have a center like that, it shows that you are welcome here. We are going to be receptive to who you are as an individual, and you are going to be a part of this community. We have this resource center in place. We're putting resources towards a particular population to let them know that they're a part of our community goals as well. So that program has, I think, really kind of taken us in a very, very positive direction to show another layer of diversity that we're looking at. And they've done a lot of programming. I have also tried to do some outreach to LGBT faculty and staff. I did a social event, a networking event downtown. I spoke with a local business owner and said, I want to have an event specifically for this population. We're going to make sure we put this on the flyers to let you know that we're specifically hosting LGBT faculty and staff, and we wanted allies to be there as well. So that, again, was a step to let people know, you know, we identify LGBT people as a part of our diversity goals, and we want to make sure that they feel welcome and a part of this community as well.
And talking about events, there's going to be a series of events happening. One recently just happened, the community policing, the intersection of Blue Lives and Black Lives Matter movements.
Right.
Here. Why are those types of conversations, when you're talking about university and the community, important?
Well, you know, working with, I worked specifically with Alex Jackson and Dan Woods. We had an initial conversation about doing something related to diversity and inclusion. And for me, after we completed the diversity task force, again, just thinking about some of the conversations that we had, even though we were really taking steps to become a more diverse and inclusive campus, our students aren't on campus 24 hours a day. They have to go out into the community. So that town-gown relationship is critical to make sure that what we're doing is going to be successful. So we really wanted to go out into the community and offer some of what we've been doing on campus, you know, as far as making sure that people were also receptive to having those conversations, that people were aware that we do have very diverse people who are a part of this community, and we want to make sure that they feel welcome, that they can go anywhere in Cape Girardeau and not have an experience that is going to make them feel like this is not their community. So the community engagement series with KRCU and the Office of Institutional Equity and Diversity was really geared to making sure that we are talking about diversity on and off campus, and making sure that people in the community can be engaged with us as well.
And it was a pretty packed event.
It was. I think we had over 100 people there. And it was at the Cape Public Library. They served as a partner and a sponsor for that event as well. I think, you know, it was a great event. It was a difficult conversation, but very critical and important. And I found it to be very productive, and people actually were asking for a part two. So that's something we'll be considering in the future.
So we're nearing the end of a very long political season, and obviously many of the students on this campus are eligible to vote at this point. How do we continue to have respectful, civil conversations when we're talking about race, when we're talking about sexuality, gender, religion, so on and so forth?
Well, you know, I have to admit, it's very difficult. A lot of the conversations that I will have with people coming into my office to potentially report the fact that they felt discriminated against, or they want to file a complaint about something that was said. A lot of it is very difficult to give a name to it. You don't want to call someone racist because they're talking about their political ideology. You don't want to call someone sexist because their political ideology is more conservative, because everyone has a right to their opinion and they have a right to free expression. But at the same time, you realize that your words have impact. And some people may not necessarily agree with what you're saying. You have a right to say it, but you do have to be careful how you say it and how it's expressed, because it can make people feel like some of these conversations are targeting me if I'm African American. Some may target someone who is LGBT if you're someone who's international and you're feeling like there's a platform against you, or people are talking about the fact that, you know, you're not really a part of this country, or, you know, they're implying that or taking it that way. So it's very difficult. It's very emotional. You know, but this is our political process. It's important for people to be able to express themselves, to, you know, decide one way or the other which political party they would like to be affiliated with. But, you know, we always have to keep in mind that, you know, your words have impact, and whether you say them in a way that is, you know, related to a particular candidate, they're coming out of your mouth. So whoever is around and who's ever listening and who's ever participating in that conversation could be impacted by those words. And, you know, I think this is one of, I guess, the most highly charged presidential elections that, you know, in my lifetime that I've participated in, and I'm ready for it to be done. You know, I think we're all kind of at that point where we just want to be able to move in a more positive direction and have more positive dialogues happening. So I'm hoping that November 9th will be a much more positive direction for us all.
Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's our show. A special thanks to my guest, Sonya Rucker, Coordinator of Institutional Equity and Diversity at Southeast Missouri State University. You can find our conversation on diversity relations at Southeast on our website at krcu.org, or find us on iTunes to conveniently hear this podcast. Join us next Thursday and Friday night at 6 for a special edition of KRCU's Going Public as we honor local veterans. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson, and as always, thanks for listening.